This is Audible.
Prologue. It's time to go. I brought the standing shields to divert the extra power to the takeoff. I never really thought I'd leave this planet again, but I'd hoped. There's always hope.
How far is it to your ship? It better not be too far. With your shields down, we're a sitting target for the Star Cruiser up above.
Oh, it's not far. Not far at all. Computers, begin liftoff procedures.
Owen looked blankly at his ancestor as the room began to shake and rumble around him. Far below, under his feet, he could hear the building roar of mighty engines.
Wait a minute. Wait just a damn minute. Your ship is part of the Standing? We're in it now?
Not part. The Standing is the ship, and vice versa.
We're going into hyperspace in a stone castle that's been sitting around for 9 centuries?
We built to last in my day. Talk to your computer if you want more details.
Oz, are you still there? Talk to me.
Yes, I'm still here. You wouldn't believe how cramped it is. Some of these systems are positively prehistory. I can't believe I'm supposed to live in something this small. There isn't room to swing a neuron.
Talk to me about the castle, Oz, or I swear I'll reprogram you with a blood spoon. Is it really a starship?
Oh, yes. A bit slow and stately, but it'll get you there. Hang on to your hat, Owen. It's going to be rather a bumpy takeoff.
On the bridge of the Dauntless, Silence and Frost watched speechlessly as the last standing of the Deathstalker clan tore itself out of the ground and leapt up into the air. Powerful energies roared around it. The jungle was flattened for miles around by the backblast, but the castle rose into the air as smoothly as any starship.
I don't believe it. A stone starship?
Gunnery officer, open fire! Blow that thing to rubble!
We can't, Captain. It's got one of the most powerful force shields I've ever seen. We don't have anything that'll breach it.
Fire on it anyway! It's got to have a weak spot!
I wouldn't put money on it.
And then the castle shimmered and was gone into hyperspace. Then there was nothing left to look at on the view screen but space. Damn.
Yeah. The Empress is not going to be pleased, is she?
Silence sat back in his command chair and made himself think calmly. They might think they've gotten away, but it's not over yet. After all, we know where they're going. Defiance Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker. With performances by Richard Rowan, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, and Terrence Aselford. Episode 5, The Dark Void Device. The Madness Maze. It was black as the deepest pit of hell, and not a light anywhere. Once there had been stars, burning bright in the darkness, but they were gone. No sun shone in the dark void, and its frozen planets sailed silently in a night without end. The last standing of the original Deathstalker dropped out of hyperspace without a murmur and drifted into orbit around the lifeless rock of the Wolfling world, also known as Lost Hayden. The castle hung above the planet in a halo of its own light, a huge stone structure with towers and battlements looking down over an endless abyss. The light didn't travel far, as though the darkness resented it, but some of it touched the Wolfling world, gleaming gently on the frozen atmosphere. There was no sign of life on the planet. All its mysteries were deep underground, safely concealed in the hidden heart of Lost Hayden. Inside the Standing, the small group of rebels stood before a wide view screen that showed what it could of the planet below. Owen Deathstalker, outlawed Lord of Viramond, who still thought himself a historian rather than a warrior. Hazel Dark, pirate, bon vivant, and reluctant rebel. Jack Random, the professional rebel, and Ruby Journey, the bounty hunter. Tobias Moon, the augmented man, come home at last. And Giles, the original Deathstalker, creator of the Dark Void. They looked at the darkness he had brought about by the snuffing of a thousand suns, and felt a little of the long night's chill seep into their bones.
"Welcome to the Wolfling world," said Giles.
He was still wrapped in his battered, greasy furs and was gnawing on his third protein cube. Apparently, being kept in stasis for over 9 centuries had given him something of an appetite. Owen had tried one of the protein cubes earlier, on learning it was the only kind of food the castle could currently produce, and had decided very definitely that he'd rather go hungry. Giles wiped his mouth on the back of his hand and studied the Dark Void with enigmatic eyes.
"This is the first light that planet has seen in 943 years. I suppose it's only fitting that I should be the one to bring back the light, since I was the one who took it away. The last time I was here, this was a living world, brimming with life. There were oceans and continents, beasts of the earth and of the air, cities and people. There were beautiful birds with tails of fire. And tourists flew through the sighing mountains on chartered gravity sleds. All gone now, crushed under the weight of a frozen atmosphere. All that remains are the Madness Maze and the Hall of the Fallen, and the cities and laboratories of Lost Hayden, quarried deep in the heart of the planet, undisturbed for so long, waiting for us to awaken them."
"Tell us about the Wolflings,"
said Hazel. She kept her eyes on the view screen, her hands automatically polishing her sword blade with a dirty rag that also served as a handkerchief.
"You said they were created here?"
"Yes. Born and died here, all but one. They were the Empire's first try at creating genetically engineered soldiers. A pinch of man, a pinch of wolf, and a few special ingredients. It took them a while to get the mix just right, but finally they ended up with the perfect hunting and killing machine, unparalleled in human evolution, the Wolfling."
"So what went wrong?"
said Ruby. She was watching Giles with her usual impassive face, her pale features almost ghostly above her black leathers.
"Nothing went wrong with the Wolflings. They were everything they were supposed to be, and more besides. It was the more that upset the scientists. The Wolflings were smart, far smarter than their human masters. Faster, stronger, more savage, and smarter too. The scientists saw the possible shape of things to come and panicked. They called in the Imperial forces, lured the Wolflings to an arranged meeting, and shot them down from ambush. Of course, the Wolflings fought back, killed a lot of men before they finally went down. Some got away and had to be hunted down. The Empire lost a lot more soldiers doing that, but eventually they got them all. Except for one, the best of the best, and the most cunning. He evaded capture, and all the traps they set. He was still here when the Empire finally gave up, and the Imperial forces went home. Sightings grew less and less, until finally he became just another myth, a legend, a story to tell newcomers. Of course, he wasn't really dead. He'd gone underground. He was still here when the Dark Void fell, and everyone but he died. He was still here when the scientists of Lost Hayden ventured into the Dark Void in search of a safe place to hide their laboratories. He watched as they experimented upon themselves, designing ever more intricate hybrids of man and machine. The Hayden men. He was there when they went out to conquer the Empire, and when they came limping back, defeated, to hide themselves away in their tomb and wait for a better time. He's down there now, watching and waiting. Impossibly old, incredibly powerful, standing guard over the Madness Maze and the Hall of the Fallen."
"How do you know so much about it?" said Random. "You were in stasis on Chandrakor when most of this was going on."
"The Wolfling has been talking to my computers. And they have been talking...
Grass is very tasty.
Let's all be very polite, and perhaps he won't kill us.
I could try,
said Ruby.
What do we need him for?
Said Moon.
I told you, he guards the madness maze.
And what's that when it's at home? Something the Hayden scientists came up with?
Oh, no, my dear. It's much older than that. There's nothing human about the madness maze. It was here long before humanity ever came to this world. The Empire colonists discovered it deep within the planet, but they never did discover what it was. The Hayden scientists deduced its function, but they had more important matters on their minds. The fools.
All right, said Owen. I'll bite. What is the purpose of the madness maze?
Evolution. And I'm the only one ever to make use of its secrets. Now let's go down and say hello to the Wolfling. By the way, a word to the wise. He is currently under the misapprehension that we have a whole army of rebels on board this ship. Let's not disillusion him. You never know when you might need to run a bluff.
How do we get down there?
Moon's harsh, buzzing voice sounded as calm as it ever did, but his blazing golden eyes never once looked away from the planet on the viewscreen.
Do you have any pinnaces or shuttlecraft on this floating anachronism?
As it happens, yes, but we can't use them. There's no way to reach the maze or the Tomb of the Hayden Man from the surface anymore. What remains of the atmosphere is frozen solid. We'll teleport down. I left a portal close to the maze the last time I was here. According to the Standing's instruments, it's still functioning. We built things to last in my day, when we weren't busy destroying them. If you'd all care to prepare yourselves as you see fit, we can go as soon as you're ready. Feel free to help yourselves to anything that catches your interest in the armory, but don't take too long about it. The Standing's power sources were nearly depleted when I came to Chandrakor all those centuries ago, and most of what was left was used up maintaining the Standing. Until I have the opportunity to recharge the power cells, this ship isn't going anywhere. There's no immediate danger. But unless you like the idea of being stranded on a world whose only points of interest are an alien maze and a large tomb, I suggest we all hurry.
Owen and Hazel made their way down to the armory, where an empty suit of armor with a missing helm politely opened the door for them. Owen regarded it suspiciously. He didn't remember it being there the last time he'd visited. Hazel ignored the armor and made straight for the more impressive-looking projectile weapons. Owen watched amusedly as she loaded herself down with guns and bandoliers of ammunition. He settled for a nasty-looking handgun that used big, bulky bullets and a few grenades to fill his pockets. No doubt they'd come in handy, but on the whole, he still thought he'd stick with the weapons he was used to. Guns were all very well, but in his experience, in the end, it always came down to cold steel and the man wielding it. Besides, at the rate Hazel was accumulating guns, they'd have to move her around on a trolley. She continued rooting through the rifle racks, unaware of his growing amusement, and finally came up with a gun so long and heavy, it took all her strength just to lift and aim it. Good choice. When you run out of ammunition, you can use it to club the enemy to death. Hazel sniffed and reluctantly put the rifle back.
Come a long way, haven't we, Aristo? From a not particularly successful pirate and an outlawed lord running for his life to the leaders of a new rebellion. Who'd have thought it?
We're only potentially a rebellion. It's going to take a hell of a lot more than the six of us to drag Lionstone off the Iron Throne. All right, if we can awaken the Hayden Man, and if we can persuade them to fight on our side, then we might be in with a chance. All kinds of people might rally to our banner if they thought we already had an army. But I'm not at all happy about placing any trust in Hayden Men.
You worry too much. The Hayden Men will behave themselves as long as we've got control of the Dark Void device. You know, these are really great guns. I've been studying their specifics in the computers. They aren't worth spit against force shields, but they'll chew up anything else you aim them at. Apparently there's something called a recoil we'll have to get used to, but no doubt we'll soon get the hang of it.
Until we run out of ammunition. We can't just run back to the castle for more in the middle of a firefight. With a disruptor, you can recharge the energy crystals at any handy power source, and you're ready to go again.
You always have to see the bad side of things, don't you? The point is, the Empire won't be expecting guns like these, and by the time they've worked out an effective response, we'll have kicked 6 different colors of shit out of them.
Owen frowned. You really think the Empire's going to follow us here? Into the dark void?
Of course, don't you?
Yes. They'd be right behind us all the way. There's only one answer that makes any sense. We have a traitor in our group.
Not necessarily. Someone could have planted a homing device on us.
No. One or another of our security systems would have found it by now. It's too obvious.
But none of us have any reason to betray the group. We've all got good reasons for being here, and none of us have any reason to love the Empire.
How about fear? Or blackmail? Or money? There's a hell of a lot of credits on our heads these days. People will break under all kinds of pressure.
Anyone you feel like pointing the finger at?
No. Not at the moment. Perhaps I'm wrong. We've all been through a lot. Sometimes I feel guilty at dragging you all into my problems.
Don't. I'm having a great time. And you didn't drag me into anything. I chose to save your sorry ass on Viramond. And you saved my life on Mistworld, so we're even.
I couldn't let you die.
Why not?
You matter to me. I've never met anyone like you, Hazel. Hazel looked at him and raised an eyebrow.
Don't start getting ideas, Stud. This is strictly a marriage of convenience.
Relax. Deathstalkers only marry for status. You're entirely safe. Hazel decided to change the subject.
How many men do you think the Iron Bitch will send after us?
At least one Star Cruiser. Possibly 2. We've made our people look bad so far, and she won't like that. We can expect full contingents of attack troops, maybe even Wampir and Battle Espers. And whether she knows the device is here or not, this has got to be a matter of pride for her now. If she doesn't stamp on us hard and soon, her own people will start thinking she's losing control of things. And some of them might try a little quiet insurrection of their own to test the waters. No. Lionstone will send as many troops as it takes to bring us down.
Good.
Hazel hefted a rifle and smiled at the weight of it.
Let them all come.
You worry me sometimes. Jack Random and Ruby Journey had already outfitted themselves at the armory with a good selection of weapons and were currently in the kitchen trying to persuade the food machines to dispense anything other than protein cubes. They'd tried every combination of codes, including shouting at the machine and giving it a swift kick or two. But all they got for their troubles were more protein cubes. There were stories of marooned starfarers who'd eaten each other rather than live off those cubes, and Jack could understand why. But he was hungry, and at his age, his body needed all the fuel it could get, so he made himself eat all of one cube and part of another. People had been awarded medals for less. Ruby had refused point-blank to touch the things, but brightened up considerably on discovering the machine could dispense a quite drinkable wine. She got through half a bottle while Jack was struggling with his cubes, and got quite chatty for her. Normally, getting conversation out of the bounty hunter was like pulling teeth. But Jack persevered, on the grounds that anything that might take his mind off what he was eating had to be a good thing. And they talked on and off for a while.
Why did you become a bounty hunter in the first place? It's not an occupation that appeals to everybody.
I was good at it, and the alternatives were worse. Can you see me sitting at the desk in sensible clothes, shuffling files, or married to some dirt farmer with a dozen kids hanging from my apron strings?
Not really, no.
Damn right. They married me off at 14 to the local collector of the water rates. It was either that or one of my cousins. He was big and heavy, with clammy hands. He thought it was fun to knock me about. He did other things, too. I waited till he was asleep one night, and then stabbed him in the throat with a carving knife. I watched him die. It took quite a long time. That was when I first realized I had a taste for excitement. I gathered up everything valuable that wasn't nailed down, torched the place, and ran for the starport. I've been on my own ever since, and I like it that way. Less complicated.
Have you done much work for the Empire?
Sure. They're the ones paying the bounties, mostly. But I'm not prejudiced. I'll work for anyone with money.
So, what are you doing with us?
I never could resist a challenge. Besides, I was promised all the loot I could handle. Not that I've seen any of it yet.
How did you get to be friends with Hazel?
You're just full of questions, aren't you? Ran across her in Mistport when we were both down on her luck. She got me out of a close call and pretty much adopted me. I didn't get a say in the matter. I'd have dumped her years ago, but there are times when it's good to have someone you can trust to guard your back. Time for you to answer some questions. How did you get to be a professional rebel?
I'm surprised you haven't heard. It was quite a famous story in its day. But I suppose that was some time ago, and my legend isn't as respected as it once was. I was a lesser son of a lesser house, of no importance to anyone, not even myself. I drank, played cards, tried a little of this and a little of that, running up debts all the way. Then I got a serving maid pregnant, and my family sent me to run a mining planet out near the rim to keep me out of trouble. Planet called Tregan. Horrible place. I'd never been outside my pampered world before, and the reality of how the other 97% live horrified me. The conditions the miners lived in, and the way they and their families were treated, were a disgrace even by Imperial standards. So, instead of stamping out the rebellion, I joined it, and somehow ended up leading the damn thing. And like you, I found something I was good at, and decided to stick with it. So I went from planet to planet, preaching insurrection, and raising armies to protect the weak and the powerless, and punish the guilty. The odds were always against us, but we won a few now and then, enough to make me a legend and a rallying point throughout the Empire.
Until they caught you.
Yes. I was getting old and slow, and I trusted the wrong people. I've always been too trusting. He sat quietly for a long time, staring at the half-eaten cube in his hands, as though it could tell him something. They broke me. I was so sure I'd rather die first. But no. I would have said anything, done anything, betrayed anyone, just so they wouldn't hurt me anymore.
But you didn't.
No. Turned out I still had a few real friends after all. They got me out, though most of them died during it. I never even knew their names.
Everyone breaks, in the end.
Yes. Even legends like Jack Random. Sometimes I think he died in that cell, and there's nothing left now but his shadow. My real friends hadn't given up on me, but I gave up on them. I wouldn't lead the rebellion. I wouldn't help them fight. I didn't want to do anything but hide in a dark room where my tormentors couldn't find me. After a while, my friends realized I was no use to them, and never would be. But they still didn't give up on me. They smuggled me to Mistworld, the one place where the Empire wouldn't follow me. A place where everyone has secrets, but nobody cares. I dived into the shadows and disappeared there. I took a new name. It wasn't difficult. I didn't look much like a legend anymore. I quite liked being Job Ironhand. No one expected anything from him.
All that time hiding in plain sight. I spent a lot of time looking for you. I could have used the money. And there you are, right under my nose. I'm glad I didn't find you then. I would have been so disappointed. You're different now.
Random raised an eyebrow. I am?
Sure. You're waking up. You aren't what you used to be, but you're getting there. What did it, Random? What lured you back into the spotlight?
You want the truth? I was bored. Simple as that. I'm still scared most of the time, and my hands shake when they think I'm not looking, but anything's better than pushing that damn broom around. There were quite a few days when even death seemed better than that. So here I am. One last fight for an old champion. Well past his prime.
You did well enough in the jungle. Lots of people wouldn't have survived to reach the standing. Don't talk yourself down, Random. I never had much use for legends. I killed a lot of them looking for one real one, but they died as easily as anyone else. You impress me a lot more than most of them.
Thank you. Good thing you didn't find me. It would have been such a pity if I'd killed you before I got to know you.
Drink.
Wish I could. My system can't handle it anymore. Kidneys took a few beatings too many. You drink. I'll enjoy it vicariously.
You feel that way about all your pleasures?
Not necessarily. If I was just 20 years younger, I'd chase you round this table a few times.
Great,
said Hazel from the doorway.
Just what we needed. A drunken bounty hunter and a horny legend. The Imperial troops will take one look and piss themselves from sheer terror.
I admire the man's courage, said Owen beside her. I wouldn't want to get within 10 feet of Ruby Journey without a chair and a whip.
I always knew you Aristos were into the kinky stuff. I'd offer you a drink, but I've only got the one bottle.
I'll join you. I could use a drink of something even halfway decent.
Ah, yes. You always did have a weakness for drink, as I recall.
Hazel looked at him.
You recall? I wasn't aware we'd met before.
It was some time ago on Mistworld. Someone recognized me and invited me to dinner. And I went because I was hungry. You were working for my host as a lady's maid. They were short of staff, and they pressed you into service at the dinner table. Ruby's head came up, and she looked at Hazel with a slow grin spreading across her face.
You're a lady's maid, Hazel?
How the hell would you remember me?
I have an excellent memory for faces. Besides, you spilled most of a bottle of rather good port over me. Ruined the last good pair of trousers I had.
You were a lady's maid?
I said I was sorry.
No, you didn't. You said...
Never mind what I said.
You brought it up.
You were a lady's maid?
She looked very pretty in the uniform, too.
I'll bet.
If any of you tell anyone else, I'll kill you.
I believe her.
Don't worry, sweetie. Your secret is safe with us.
There's something I wanted to ask you, Random,
said Hazel in the manner of someone determined to change the subject.
Owen and I were talking about some of the campaigns you fought in. You led rebellions that covered entire worlds, commanded whole armies, even had your own attack fleet at one time. What I want to know is, where did all the money come from? Wars are expensive. Men, supplies, guns. Who funded all those armies and attack ships? I never heard you were independently wealthy, so who paid the bills?
Men of goodwill, mostly. The rest came from anywhere I could raise it. There were always people around with an interest in seeing authority toppled, or at least challenged. Political groups, persecuted religions, businessmen who stood to make a profit from war. Young nobles who couldn't wait to inherit, or who were looking for a little excitement. There were always factions jostling for position within the Empire, ready to sell each other out for a moment's advantage. I learned not to ask too many questions.